Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grunewald, and I will be your host. I've also got my guy Blake in here with me. Blake, how are we feeling today?
Yes, sir. Feeling very good. Yeah, we're talking a little bit off air, but our house right now is like a hazmat hot zone. Our children are diseased. and so it's funny, man. We just pass it back and forth to each other. It's like a vicious cycle, and it's awesome. So I just like to hang out in the basement and just do podcasts.
That sounds safer these days, honestly. Yeah, I was at the mall in town today, just getting some gifts. I had my oldest along with me, and I was just like constantly thinking about all the germs that I'm bringing home and how no one's going to sleep for the next week just because of one trip to the mall.
Yeah, straight up.
It seems like we're into that season in this time. But by now, I think all our listeners know the drill, what we're up to tonight. We're here to look at some players who've been performing well and some who've been performing poorly, try to make sense of that performance thus far. Today, we're also going to try something a little new. I'm going to throw a little two truths and a lie at Blake here. This is the time on ice edition. So I'm going to come up with two truths and a lie, and Blake's got to figure out which one is the lie. And then obviously, we'll talk a little bit about what it means for fantasy. So here are the three things. Tell me which one you think the lie is. Number one, Arturi Lehkonen is averaging more ice time than Austin Matthews. Mm. Number two, Cam Fowler is averaging more ice time than Roman Josi. And number three, Kevin Fiala is averaging more ice time than Brock Besser. Which one do you think is the lie?
Okay, isn't this provocative? This is something. By the way, everyone, we got a lot of money riding on this, all right? So, yeah, I get this right. Big payday for me, all right? Nate, that's a verbal contract right there. Okay, let's see. So I feel like I have Lehkonen and Matthews on a lot of teams together, and I think that is probably true. He's been getting a lot of deployment there. Matthews has had a couple games where he's playing, 16 minutes, 17 minutes or something. So it should be close, but I'm taking Lehkonen there, so I think that's true. Cam Fowler averaging more ice time than Roman Josi. And Kevin Fiala averaging more ice time than Brock Besser. I say the Kevin Fiala one is probably true. Besser's been getting minimized in Vancouver there. He's had a couple games where he's playing like 11 minutes, 12 minutes. Fiala's up around 16. And then, so I think number two is the false one. Cam Fowler, he's getting more than Roman Josi. Ro-Yo, that's my guess.
You know what's hilarious is I just realized that I made these all true.
Why are you doing? What is this, a mind game?
Yes, this is exactly
this is
a mind
the
game.
Kind of
it was just
bullying.
Stacked against
no,
you.
That's right. Yeah.
That's you said hilarious. The verbal contract, and I realized as you were saying it that I made them all true. I flipped the last one. And,
yeah, there you go.
Well, I flipped it the wrong way. So, yeah, all three of these are actually true. This is actually three truths. It's a new game that I'm pioneering here
three
on
truths.
The show.
That's just good podcasting right there. And it is, actually. We enjoy that. I sounded
everyone.
So convincing, though. I don't know.
Did.
If you didn't say it, they would have believed, I think.
Yeah, for what it's worth, the Cam Fowler and Roman Josi one was the closest one. So Cam Fowler's at 25.01 and Roman Josi's at 24.56. So they're 5 seconds average time on ice apart. So you did nail the one that's closest. The Kevin Fiala one I thought is kind of interesting between him and Brock Besser. Like you kind of view them, I feel like, as similar deployment forwards or have in the past at least. And now we've got rumors about Brock Besser being on his way out of town, that he's given permission to seek a trade elsewhere. Yeah. And his time on ice has really gone down. He's been playing on the third line, booted off the top power play in favor of Andrei Kuzmenko. He's down at 15 minutes, 45 seconds average time on ice for the season now. So I'm holding Besser in one place, and I'm really not sure what to do about it, to be honest. He's back down on the third line again. He has bounced around a little bit in that lineup. But you're the Vancouver guy. Tell me, what should I do with Brock Besser? Is this going to resolve quickly? Should I let him go, or what are we doing?
Yeah, as always, it just depends who you're going to pick up, right? I mean, the thing with Besser right now is, his deployment is trending down, but he's still scoring. It's weird. Like he's playing less minutes and he's getting more points. So he's not in the plans here. That's what we're seeing. Right. And that's the big difference between Kevin Fiala and Brock Besser, right? Kevin Fiala is a centerpiece on the Kings, right? Whereas Besser is, like you said, they're minimizing him. And I don't know. I would hold him. I have him in one spot. I mean, but I got him very late. Like, he was being drafted very late. And yeah, it's weird. I mean, he just had such a promising rookie season, him and Matt Barzal. And you're like, okay, this guy's going to be a, you know, perennial 40 goal scorer. And it just never materialized. He got injured. He has some personal issues. And I love the guy though. He's just such a beauty. So I really want him to do well, but his game is very one dimensional. He's the type of player where he needs other players to kind of boost him up too, right? He can't do it himself. So yeah, that's kind of the situation with him.
Yeah, I do feel that with Besser a little bit. In the past, when he's had terrific situations, he's produced in them, but it does seem like he is a little bit more dependent on his line mates than like truly elite kind of level players. Like even Pettersson there on the Canucks, you can see him do it without terrific line mates, but Besser seems to be more dependent. I do see I got my guy Toronto Dave in the chat. What's up, TD? Glad to see ya.
Hell yeah, Toronto Dave.
Good to have you in for our three truths segment here. The other
what a segment.
Yeah, the other two here, Cam Fowler and Roman Josi. This is just to underscore basically how valuable Cam Fowler is, and the fact that he's still, I think, like 23% rostered in Yahoo. He's still widely available. So definitely Cam Fowler's very much worth going out to acquire. And Arturi Lehkonen is, say what you want about him. And I'm not too convinced that he, you know, maintains this. Nichushkin's coming back soon. Landeskog was skating, I heard. So all those guys coming back could bump Lehkonen down. We'll see if he still maintains a spot on that top power play after all is said and done. But to this point anyway, averaging almost 21 minutes a night. So anybody averaging 21 minutes a night in Colorado is definitely going to be worth rostering while that's happening.
I think he's injured right now, isn't he? Oh, Three Tooth is an elite seggy.
Three Truths, elite segment. We'll have to bring it back.
We can't lie. We can't lie on this podcast, all
right? That's right. All right, well, we better put that one to bed now. We better get into the meat of the episode here. We're going to get into performing well. So the first player up, we got to talk about Dylan Cousins. This is a guy I was on last week. Anyone who's a subscriber to Patreon knows that he was my number one streamer for last week. That was a good call, it turned out. He's got 5 goals and 7 points in his last 5 games now. What do you think about Cousins at this point? Like, now that he's had the week that he's had, and they're playing again tonight, actually. We should look up while we're sitting here, and we should look up what he's been able to put up tonight. But now that he's kind of had the week that he's had, do we, like, is he just a classic hold at this point? Like, you probably streamed him in for this week, given that the Sabres had the good schedule. But now, are we just holding on and seeing how long it takes for the wheels to fall off, if they ever do? Or what are you doing? Yeah, Cousins 2 assists again tonight, so he's still killing it. What are you doing with Cousins here?
I love it. Yeah, I'm here for it, for sure. He's a young guy, so that's always volatile, right? But right, if you streamed him in this week, man, you're loving life. Like, I got him in 2 spots just because of Buffalo's schedule. They had a great schedule this week. I got him. I got Jack Quinn in one of my – I picked up Casey Mittelstadt for some reason. Terrible pickup. Victor Olofsson, get that garbage out of here. But Cousins, oh, my goodness. This man, yeah, he just looks good. So he's second line with Jack Quinn and I think it's J.J. Paterka.
Yep.
And but he's first power play, and Buffalo's power play is killing it right now. I was looking, they're like a upper echelon in the league. I think they're 5th or 6th or something like that. And you know, they're just flying high offensively right now, and this guy's a key benefactor of that, right? So yeah, another 2 assists tonight. I mean, this is crazy. He's up 23 points in 25 games, 75 point pace over the season. He's not a big shooter, so he's averaging like 2.7 shots a game, and his shooting percentage is pretty reasonable, though. It's only like 13.4. That's sustainable to me. So I don't know. He's a young guy, and I'm always a little bit wary of younger players. You know, like, they're streaky, right? But 23 points in 25 games for this guy. We could be looking at 50, 55 points, 60 points maybe. That would be crazy. That would be a nice little season for this dude.
Yep. Yeah, I got another comment here. Is that a Jack Armstrong reference?
Get that garbage out of here. Hello.
Solid reference to a basketball announcer for those confused. With Cousins, I'll run through the last five games here before tonight, obviously. 16-17 average time on ice. He is getting up on that top power play unit, as we were mentioning. 58% IPP, 28% shooting percentage, 21.4% on ice shooting percentage, which is pretty astronomical. But yeah, 24th in shots per 60. And then on the on-ice side, 41st in scoring chances for per 60. Those are both strong numbers. I see tonight he's got another six shots through, what are we, through two periods here. So yeah, Cousins is definitely hot right now. No doubt about it. I'm holding him where I picked him up. I don't think you can drop him at this point. Yep. With how hot he's been. And yeah, honestly, like, the underlying stats are good here as well. But I will say that I'm not married to my Cousins here. I don't suggest getting married to your Cousins. So the reason
you shouldn't do that. I agree with you on that. That's good.
Apples and Genos is a don't marry your Cousins podcast. But the reason here is that time on ice being still just above 16 minutes. That's still not terrific, and that really caps the upside for me. Even if he's on that top power play, there's only so much you can expect from a top power play. So I think, like, what he's shown in this little stretch here is that he has, you know, maybe 60, 65 point upside as a point pace for the rest of the season if he really kind of hits on the high end of things here. But I really think once it all kind of settles out that you're not looking at a guy who's going to continue like a point per game pace here. I do think that Jack Quinn is a legitimate player in the league, and he's really come on of late. His individual scoring chances for is borderline elite at this point, obviously in lower minutes than some of the other top names in the league. But yeah, I think that Cousins has some guys to work with at even strength, but the real crux of his production is coming on that top power play unit. And so he's going to be a little bit more volatile in that sense. Like, I do think there's going to be, you know, a week or 2 weeks coming, whether it be, you know, in a month or it be in 3 months, wherever it is, that Cousins is going to throw up a whole bunch of zeros again. And you're going to be wondering, do I stream him out at this point? And the answer is probably going to be yes, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think that Cousins is probably going to be a guy who's going to be right around that bottom of your roster. While he's hot like this, you're definitely going to ride with it. But I don't expect that over the course of an entire season, he's going to be a season-long hold. So I will say that, yeah, hold him for now. But just be cognizant and watch for when this starts to tail off, because it probably will tail off at some point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And yeah, the listeners should definitely remember that, because what I find what happens in fantasy hockey is you get a player like this that goes on a heater, you pick him up for a week and he dominates. Then it's like you're married to him, married to your Cousins for like the next 2 months, waiting for it to happen again. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're saying is absolutely true. Be prepared to drop this guy. This guy is not going to be a league winner. Okay, so it's just something to know, right? Obviously, you hold for now while he's playing like this, but like Nate said, he's a young guy, volatile. He's going to throw up some zeros at some point. I'm glad the numbers are kind of backing him up at this point. So yeah, you got to hold, but you know, don't hesitate. Be ruthless. If you need to drop this guy, drop him for somebody better.
Yep. Let's move on. Blake Wheeler, we have to talk about. 3 goals, 9 points in his last 5 games. Man is absolutely crushing it. Everybody left him for dead, it felt like. Now he's back on the top line with Scheifele and Cole Perfetti, of all people, and he's been crushing it. So, Blake Wheeler, are we all the way back in? Are we back to, you know, point per game Blake Wheeler, or what's going on over in Winnipeg?
You know damn well I'm riding with my man Blake, all right? Be like, hey, Blake. Yeah, my guy, Blake Wheeler. All right. The interesting thing with Blake Wheeler, he was a really heavy pickup of mine like 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I would always target Blake Wheeler because they put him out in every situation, right? He's top power play. He's playing shorthanded. He was getting shorthanded points too at a pretty reasonable level back in the day. So I'm very happy that he's having a bit of resurgence. But the truth is, it's not even really a resurgence. Like, if you look at his points per game over the last few seasons, this guy is consistent. He was being dogged this year, like underrated to an insane degree, right? Like, this guy was, it's weird to call Blake Wheeler a sleeper, but he was a sleeper this year. Since 2015, this guy has averaged 0.9 points per game. Like, you know, so because he had two sort of injury riddled seasons, he still was at 0.92 points for those seasons. So, and he's right up there again this year. He's at a 78 point pace this year if he stays healthy. I think he can get 65, 70 points. You know, he's a playmaker, so he's not going to get a bunch of goals. He might get you 20 goals. That might not happen. His shooting percentage is up right now, so I think the goals are going to drop. But I think 65, 70 points is pretty reasonable for Wheeler. His ice time is down. His shots are down. So, I mean, if any year a little regression is going to happen, it'll probably be this year, but it hasn't happened yet. And he's playing with my man, Mom Spaghetti. I love it.
Yeah. I'm kind of right in line with you there on Wheeler. So the last five games, obviously the luck metrics, IPP shooting percentage, on ice shooting percentage, they're all pretty high. They're going to be when you're scoring 9 points in five games. He's not a guy who shoots a ton. So he comes in 152nd in shots per 60, 112th in scoring chances for per 60. The on ice numbers though look pretty solid for him. And that's really what he's more been in his career. He's never really been a high end goal scorer. He's always been more of a distributor, and 42nd in Corsi 4 per 60, 35th in scoring chances 4 per 60 over these last five games. Those are good numbers. They're not like elite numbers. They definitely don't support, you know, 9 points in five games kind of point production moving forward. But overall, yeah, I'm kind of there with Wheeler. I think there are some signs in his individual stats that he as a player is slowing down. But his on-ice numbers are actually improved this year.
Weirdly.
So all that kind of washes out to him being roughly the same player as we've seen before for me. Yep. So, yeah, I might even say 70 to 75 points is a reasonable expectation for Wheeler. He is one of these guys who goes super hot and super cold. We've seen that in the past from Wheeler. So there may be some stretches where you're thinking about dropping him, and you may have to even at some points because he goes so cold for so long before he gets so hot again. So we'll deal with that when it comes to it. But for right now, like, stay in the Flames. Wheeler's hot, and I'm ready to ride with him.
You got to ride with the wheel, man. Yeah, he's he's a legend. He's doing well.
Johnny Gaudreau, number three here. 2 goals, 10 points in his last five games. This guy's the same amount of points in his last five games as Jason Robertson. We're all goo goo gaga for Jason Robertson, but what about some love for my guy Johnny Hockey? Is it just because he's a short king? Like, what's going on here? Why is nobody talking about Johnny Gaudreau?
I like to call him John Gaudreau. All right, it's like one of my
put
biggest
some
pet peeves
on his
name.
Put
some respect. That's John. That's Mr. Gaudreau. All right. No, it's actually for a worse reason than that. I remember the Flames were playing the Canucks in the playoffs a few years ago, probably the last time the Canucks made the playoffs. Jim Houston just kept saying, Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Gaudreau. Everybody else is by their last name. Johnny Gaudreau is Johnny Gaudreau every single time. Yeah. People just like to say it. So I call him John Gaudreau. All right. that's just a little pettiness on my end. But let's get back to business. Gaudreau. He's going to get all the minutes he wants. He's going to get all the offensive deployment that he, you know, could ever want. Boy, Colorado is bad, though. I mean, thankfully,
Columbus,
what did I just say?
Colorado.
Colorado, they're bad, too. All right. Just bad people. not a bad team, just bad people. Columbus is bad. All right. But I'm glad Line A is back. That's obviously like, if Gaudreau was doing this part of this while Line A was out, right? And thankfully Boone Jenner has been there to give him a little bit of support, right?
Yep.
But John Gaudreau, he had 40 goals last year. That's crazy. I just can't see him ever repeating that. He doesn't strike me as that type of player. And in Columbus here, I don't think that I think obviously Line A is going to be the trigger man there, but you know, 10 points in five games. I love to see it. He's really the only one going on that team right now. They're so injured. Everybody is injured on that team. So I don't know if you got him, you're happy, but I wouldn't expect what happens, what happened last year to happen again this year. I don't even know if I'd expect like a 90 point season. I don't know. I'm not high on Gaudreau this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do think that Gaudreau has shown that he can sustain at least, you know, some portion of that elite production he showed last year. Like last year, no doubt about it, the context was elite, right? That line with Lindholm Tkachuk just clicked. It clicked all year. There was like no hiccups all year. It was perfect. It was like, his on-ice numbers were like McDavid, Draisaitl level on-ice numbers. So catching that kind of lightning in a bottle again was never going to happen. I didn't project it that way. I don't think many people did. But over in Columbus, now he's up a minute and 10 per game on the season. Yep. You know, the IPP is higher, but the IPP is probably going to be higher for Johnny Gaudreau in Columbus than it was in Calgary, where he's literally the only source of offense, basically. And honestly, I've been pleasantly surprised by his shot rates and his individual scoring chance for rates. Over this last little stretch, they haven't been super impressive. 57th in shots per 60, 81st in individual scoring chances for per 60. But he's dragging the whole team on his back in terms of the on-ice numbers. 38th in Corsi 4 per 60 and 73rd in scoring chances 4 per 60. Like, this is a bad team. And he's posting what's basically like the second best on-ice numbers of his career, which is just nuts. So I'm actually pretty impressed with what Gaudreau's put on tape so far this year, or on the stat sheet as it is for me more so. But yeah, I think, obviously 10 points in five games, not going to happen again, but, moving forward, I'm pretty comfortable with Gaudreau at a 90 point pace, to be honest. Yeah. Let's get that up there. We got a comment. Great pals hat. That's you, Betty.
No, that's me and Nate. We're pals. All right. You'll be my friend, right, Nate?
I'll be your friend.
Yeah, you hesitated. I didn't like that. All right.
I'll be your friend as long as I get to keep springing three true segments on you.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. No problem. Whatever it takes.
All right. Let's keep rolling. Let's get into the next one. Number four is Sean Durzi, who all of a sudden has a goal and 7 points in his last five games. I don't know who's expecting that, but guy's still below 20 minutes, 19 and a half minutes average time on ice through those five games. What do we make of this? Is this just kind of a flash in the pan with Durzi? We have seen stretches where he's been fantasy relevant before. But yeah, what do you make of this with Durzi? Is this, is there something more here? We know Drew Doughty's, you know, not had a terrific season so far in LA. Is there anything to pick up for fantasy managers with this streak from Durzi?
I think it's just a player to watch. And truthfully, I have him on some teams. I liked him early on in the season too. He reminds me of kind of a Tony D'Angelo, kind of that type of player, or Mikhail Sergachev, like back, you know, when he wasn't getting minutes. And they could be sort of a similar situation, like Tampa Bay, you know, Hedman and Sergachev, and then Doughty and Durzi, right? Right. He may be a season off from that, but he's getting second power play time. He's getting, you know, his deployment could use a little boost, but he's on a 55 point pace. So I like Durzi a lot. I have him on two teams. You know, hits and blocks, you're getting per riffs, like you're going to get over 100 on each, looks like, you know, if he plays a full season. So that's excellent. I like the player. He's a player that I'm watching and I think can probably take a big step this season into next season, where I think he'll maybe be a more of a feature piece. But I think this year I like him for like 40 points, 45 points maybe. I think that's reasonable. And then if Doughty gets injured, you know, he's rocking. You got to pick him up at that point.
Yeah. So I think you're bang on the money there with Durzi. So this recent streak, I think, is just that. It's a streak. Honestly, I was kind of disappointed to see that he was down in shots and individual Corsi for. Yeah. So in this five games where he's been so hot, he's down at 184th amongst defensemen in shots per 60, 117th in individual Corsi for per 60. The on-ice context really raising him up here. That's 49th in Corsi for per 60 and 22nd in scoring chances for per 60. So on-ice context does matter a lot. I do weight that more heavily with defensemen as well, because a lot of the time, guys who rack up a bunch of assists, they aren't necessarily big shooters from the point. A lot of teams don't even, they basically tell their defensemen not to shoot from the point. So a lot of players, a lot of defensemen, I will say, I look at the on-ice numbers and give them a little bit more weight than I do with forwards. So those look very good to me. And I've had a soft spot for Durzi, but the fact that he isn't really shooting when that was a little bit, you know, a little bit more of a profile in his game previously, like, last season, like if we go by the season stats, last season, 5.7 shots per 60. This year, through 24 games, 4.1 shots per 60. So that's a pretty significant step back if it plays out over a full season. So that's kind of my disappointment with Durzi, I guess I'll say, to this point. But the on-ice context remains really good. basically exactly in line with where he was last year. So yeah, 40 to 45 points, and then obviously that contingent upside for top power play if Doughty were to go down again, or if he, you know, continues to play somewhat poorly and they just want to take some minutes off him and they give top power play to Durzi. I think that's a possibility as well. I don't think Durzi has a ton of upside for even strength time on ice. I've heard a fair bit about his defensive struggles of late, so I don't think he's got necessarily a ton of even strength upside in terms of time on ice. But yeah, all the upside in the world on the offensive side of things. And so 40 to 45 points in his current role with upside for more if he ever got that boost, I think is a reasonable spot to be.
Yeah, that's a really good point about his defense, because I remember because I had him on some teams early, like I drafted him, and he played a couple good games offensively, like he was getting points, and then the coach benched him because in one of the games in overtime, I think he just had a bonehead giveaway like right up the middle that led to the game-winning goal. And so, yeah, with Durzi, there's going to be some hiccups for sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was a healthy scratch again at some point in the season. You know what I mean? He's playing under 20 minutes. I mean, I don't know what kind of confidence the coach has in him. So yeah, something to think about. That sticks in my mind because I had him. I'm like, why are you like, because I'm playing fantasy hockey. What are you doing? You're putting my defenseman out of here. He just got me 2 assists and a goal. What are you doing? But yeah, I think there's something to that. So I think this year could maybe vault him into a bit more of a bigger role next year.
Absolutely. TD says that he'll be your friend too, and we can be pals.
Oh.
He also says we keep up bringing up names from way back when he kept up with hockey a little bit more. He's getting nostalgic about it.
It's never too late, Toronto Dave, stars. All right? Yeah, you just get back into it, buddy. All right, come on.
You got to get back into it. All right, let's keep rolling. Matty Beniers is number 5 here. 4 goals, 7 points in his last 5 games. Obviously, the rookie sensation out of Seattle. Are we all aboard the Beniers train at this point, or do you have some concerns under the hood here?
You kind of have to be, but I do have concerns under the hood for sure. You know, when he's on a heater like this, you got to get him. I picked him up in one league because he was available. It's so weird. I've seen some Seattle games too. Like he's a very talented player, but he can be invisible for a lot, large portions of the game until he isn't, you know, until he gets a goal or 2 goals now. And then, you know, this is propped up by, I mean, in that big game, that 9-8 game, he only had 2 goals only. You know what I mean? I feel like this is a prime example of like, yeah, get him while he's hot. And this is kind of similar to Dylan Cousins, right? You know, if just, you know, forget about the name, like Matty Beniers, he may win the Calder Trophy or he'll be, you know, nominated for it possibly, but it doesn't mean you have to hold him at all costs. Right.
Right.
And I'm sure as you'll go into like some of his advanced metrics here, like they don't really show a player that this kind of thing is sustainable, right? His shooting percentage right now is almost 21%. That's ludicrous, you know? And he doesn't shoot a lot. He shoots 2 shots a game. So you shoot 2 shots a game and your shooting percentage goes down to 10%. I mean, we're looking at a major negative regression there, right? So just something to think of. You don't have to hold this player at all costs, but he should definitely be rostered right now. You can't not give it to Matty B.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, I'm pretty in line with what you're saying here. Over these last 5 games, 16-12 average time on ice, which, again, kind of in line with Cousins, which is what we're saying. Seattle runs this kind of split power play, so it never ends up being, like, even when they get most of the ice time, it's like 55% of the ice time. So it's not like power play one is ever something to write home about, really, in Seattle. So there's that. He is definitely in the top 6 in terms of deployment or time on ice. So that's working for him. Last we saw him on a line with Jordan Eberle and Jared McCann in that top 6. That's a fine enough spot to be. It's not ideal. Like my preferred wingers would be Schwartz and Burakovsky there. I prefer those two players, but it's a fine place to be. In terms of his individual stats, you know, over these last 5 games, 47th in shots per 60, 86th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. But the on-ice numbers are pretty atrocious. 228th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 175th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. And that's on a Seattle team that's actually done a fair bit of scoring of late. So that's a little bit concerning to me. Yeah, and you mentioned the shooting percentage, 21% on the season through 24 games. when I see a player who's got shots per 60 on the season, he's at 7.0 shots per 60, and he's at 6.0 individual scoring chances for per 60. When I see someone whose shots are higher than their individual scoring chances for between those two rates, then I tend to think that a high shooting percentage is not super sustainable. When you look at some of the players who sustain high shooting percentages over the course of a full season, then they typically end up with an higher individual scoring chances for rate than their shots rate. So just something to look out for if you're wondering to yourself. We don't have a big sample size on Beniers, obviously, so we don't have, you know, prior years to go back and look at and be like, okay, does this guy typically shoot a super high shooting percentage? He played 10 games last year and had a 17% shooting percentage. Like, what do you make of that? I wouldn't draw too many huge conclusions from a 10-game sample as a rookie. So, yeah, all that to say, when you're looking at someone, you don't have a lot of data points to go off. You can use that kind of shots per 60 versus individual scoring chances for per 60 metric to try to at least give yourself some sort of idea if you think higher shooting percentage is in the cards for that player.
Love it. Pro tip right there. Yes, sir.
Number six, David Krejci, 3 goals, 7 points in his last 5 games. Obviously playing with Pasternak, who's lighting the world on fire this year, as many predicted. But do we really think that Krejci is this guy, like, after a year off from the NHL? Do we think he's just riding some coattails at this point? What do you think about Krejci moving on from this point here, Blake?
Yes. Yes, we do. He's, I love Krejci, actually, especially because you could have got him, like, he wasn't even drafted in a lot of leagues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't expect
still widely
this,
available.
Yeah. Yeah. He's out there. Right. And he's playing with Pasta. He's a cooking of something up. So, you know, I mean, Krejci should be rostered, no question, but, look at what he's been doing here. Like, I'm just looking at his basic stats, and his shooting percentage this year is 30%, 30%. That's not going to continue, right? So his assists may continue, right, because of the players that he's playing with, but his goal scoring, that there's no way, you know, it's just not going to continue. He's got 8 goals now. He might finish with like 15, you know, of the season, maybe, you know, but he could get 55 points. He could get 60 points, maybe, just depending on how it all goes, right? Like, what kind of, if he stays, you know, get some reasonable power play time, which he is, like, this year, he's getting, you know, just over 3 minutes on the season on the power play. So with good players, right? Boston's just killing it right now too. I mean, so you got to take that into account. Like, they're one of the hottest, if not the hottest team in the league right now. So yep, they're firing on all cylinders. Krejci's a part of it. He's playing with Pasta, and I'm here for it. I love it. The guy, I did not expect this for sure. So, I mean, what do you have? Yeah. 44 points in 51 games last year. I think that's, I think that's reasonable, that pace anyway, you know what I mean? So maybe, mm-hmm, maybe 55, 60 points for Krejci on the season, but he's going to go, yep, through some slumps too. And the goal scoring is not going to continue.
Yep. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Yeah. That point pace that you mentioned, obviously from the season before last, 44 points in 51 games, he went back, right, to Czech Republic last year. Yeah. Tore it up there because he's an NHL player playing in the Czech league. But yeah, it comes back, and on the season now he's at 19 points in 20 games. Playing with Pasternak can probably do that for you, but definitely the 30% shooting percentage, as you mentioned, way too high. And even in this last streak, the rate stats all across the board are just really quite bad, honestly, with, yeah, Krejci. 249th in shots per 60, 341st in Corsi 4 per 60. That one kind of blew me away, considering that he's been playing with Pasternak at even strength. If you look at his numbers on the season, they look a little bit more in line, but definitely not a guy who's going to shoot a lot. My projections for the season had him at 16 goals and 59 points in an 82-game season, and I still feel like that's probably his kind of best-case scenario, or even most likely scenario moving forward, that kind of pace. So that's about where I'd be valuing Krejci moving forward. He definitely can and will have these hot streaks throughout the season, but he also will probably have some cold streaks, as any player who's not, you know, if you're not a 70-plus point player, that you're going to have hot and cold streaks like this throughout the season. So just be aware of that, and don't be afraid to move on to Krejci and off of Krejci as the situation progresses. Being with Pasternak is great, but it's not, you know, be-all, end-all either. So just be aware of Krejci and keep an eye on him so that you do drop him when he goes cold again.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you're in a points league too, I mean, he should be must roster in a points league. Like he's giving you nothing peripherally or any other categories, but he's giving you sure. power play points. He's giving you assists and right now he's giving you goals for some reason. So well done to you, Krejci. Did a good job.
Yep. All right, number seven, the last player performing well that we'll talk about tonight, Andrei Burakovsky. I alluded to it before, Burakovsky being one of the wingers that I really want to see people play with in Seattle right now. 4 goals, 7 points in his last 5 games, about 18 minutes average time on ice there. And yeah, I think he's playing pretty well. What are you seeing with Burakovsky, Blake?
The whole Seattle team to me is kind of... like you mentioned earlier, like it's so balanced, you know, like no one really stands out. And at least from the eye test, because I watched a lot of that 9-8 game, like, because once the, you know, the score started racking up, I'm like, I got to get this thing on. Like, what's happening, right? And then it still kept going, which was insane. And he got the winner in that in overtime, which with a rocket. I mean, the guy's very talented. There's no question. Seattle's a really hard one. I think it's one of the hardest teams to sort of figure out fantasy wise and predict, because you don't know what kind of deployment's going to happen from game to game. You know, like you said, their power plays are like 1A and 1B kind of thing. And they do. Yeah. They just have a bunch of the same kind of players. Like their whole team is streamer level, you know, but this is a guy with a high offensive acumen, you know, 61 points last year with Colorado. I think he's in a better situation now, right? He was behind so many good players in Colorado. In Seattle, he's the guy. He's out there on in overtime scoring goals. You know, he's on an 85 point pace right now. So I like that. And his numbers, again, just looking at his basic numbers here, he's almost doubling his shots. Well, not doubling, sorry. He's at 2.8 this year. He was at 1.9 last year. So you got to like that. He's upping his shots. He's getting, you know, he's being relied on more. I think it's a great pickup, you know. Doesn't look like he's giving you anything peripherally, but power play, offense, it's a no brainer.
Yep. Yeah, definitely a points league guy more so, but definitely doing the thing right now. So just looking at his last 3 years here, go back to 2020 and 2021 in Colorado, the COVID shortened season, he averaged 15.05 there. Then he got bumped up to 16.15 last year in Colorado. This year in Seattle here through 24 games, he's averaging 17.23 and then 18 minutes a night in the last 5 games, as I mentioned before. The underlying stats look pretty solid to me. 79th in shots per 60 over these last 5 games, but 37th in individual scoring chances for per 60. So he's getting to those areas and getting those chances off. The team context, again, similar to Beniers, not as great. He's definitely kind of dragging things upward on his own. 180th in Corsi 4 per 60, 131st in scoring chances 4 per 60. So he is kind of almost the guy driving the bus, it feels like, in Seattle on his line anyway. And yeah, if I look at on the season, like his shot rates, his individual scoring chance, four rates, all higher than his career. Like he's really seems to have kind of taken this mantle of being a top line winger and being that guy for this team and really taken it on himself and done a lot with it. I am still kind of leery of Burakovsky because he's always kind of been another one of these guys who goes hot and goes cold and never really seems to put it all together for a full season. But if I'm picking a season in which Burakovsky puts it together for a full season, this kind of feels like it. Again, I think the upside is capped because of the Seattle power play situation. You're not going to get a situation where he runs into 4 minutes of power play time on ice per game and just absolutely goes off for like 30 power play points or something like that in a season. But yeah, overall, I think that you're looking at a guy who I probably projected him for something like 50 points on the season, and now I'm thinking more like 65, even 70 is well within reach for Burakovsky. So yeah, in points leagues for sure, he's a definite pickup and hold. I think he's pretty well rostered across leagues at this point. But yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised by Burakovsky, I will say, and I think that he's earned himself a little bit of grace here, and even if he goes cold for a minute, I think I'd be holding on to see if he can turn it around, because it does seem like he's thriving in what's the biggest deployment or biggest usage that he's ever seen in his career.
Yeah, for sure. I'd like to see him separate himself a little bit from those guys. I think he has the ability to do that, and those numbers kind of show that as well. I love that scoring chances there. So, yeah, he's really getting it done on that team. So, hopefully a few more of those go in, and he gets – just give him another minute of ice time, minute and a half of ice time. Let's get this guy rolling here.
Absolutely. Well, before we get into players performing poorly, I do need to remind you, you got to check out the Apples and Genos Discord server. We've got a growing community in there, 500-plus like-minded fantasy managers. Come in, talk to some people, bounce some ideas off them, get some content alerts, get the latest news as it drops. Everybody's always talking about the latest news in there. Also, if you're looking for help with your team, help with, you know, those crucial waiver wire pickups, you're not sure what to do to maximize your team for the upcoming week, you can check out the Patreon. $5 a month gets you a weekly article and podcast detailing all of the best pickups for the upcoming week. I include some long-term plays in there as well. Both of those links are in the show description, so come check that out. Let's roll. Let's get into performing poorly. Unfortunately, we're still talking about Victor Hedman in this segment. I feel like we have to until things start to turn around. Like, we got to keep answering these questions. I have to hear about it through Twitter and Discord questions every single day, it feels like, at this point. Still 0 points in his last five games. Crucially, though, he did get back on the top power play on Saturday against the Leafs. It did seem a little weird. I kind of came into the game halfway through the game. I was off at the in-laws for most of the day, and I was trying to write an article while I was watching, so I was kind of in and out of the game. But altogether, yeah, he definitely did get on the top power play once again. We'll obviously see if that maintains. They had a positive result. They won the game, so we'll see. But yeah, are we all back in on Hedman fully after if he – yeah, so we – assume this situation, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We get the practice lines tomorrow. He's practicing once again on the top power play. Are we all back aboard? Nothing has ever happened. Hedman is once again 70 to 80 point player from the blue line. Are we back in to that extent, or do you still have qualms here?
Yeah, I don't think so, my man. This is unprecedented, like, really, for him, you know? It can't just all be power play. It can't be, right? I think there's been some, like, I don't know, if you play hockey, right? Or like you play with guys and sometimes you have it and sometimes you don't, or sometimes your role changes, right? And maybe that's what's happened here with Hedman. Like, you know, like we mentioned before about, oh, don't worry, Toronto Dave, I got qualms, baby. I got all kinds of qualms, all right? yeah, it's, I think he's maybe focusing more on defense, or they're asking him to do that. And, you know, when the coach at the beginning of the season said, Sergachev, we're going to put you in more situations. We're going to play you more, right? Maybe there's some internal dialogue, because it feels like something more than just the power play. Because it's, yeah, this is crazy. I mean, he's only playing like 30 seconds less of ice time. So, you know, 24 and a half minutes per game. He's still getting that. He's still hitting. He's still blocking. His shots are down. You know, he's only shooting 2 shots a game, whereas last season, his big season, he had 2.7 per game, right? His shooting percentage is in the toilet. Because I don't know, he's just not getting very many good chances. But yeah, I don't know, something stinks, you know. He's 85 points last year. He's on pace for 37 points this year. So that's just, I don't think anyone could have predicted that. You know, you don't normally see a player of this caliber, even at this age, 31, fall off this quickly. So I feel like something's going on there. Maybe an injury, maybe some internal conversations about roles on the team. I don't know. But yeah, and you can't do anything with him either. You can't trade him. You right. can't drop him. I have Hedman on two teams. You can't do anything. You're stuck. No one wants, like, he's not even a buy low. He might be a stay low this year, which is not cool. Especially when you pick them up in the third round or the second round, you know, it's like, God dang. Yeah, but whatever. I don't know. You got Hedman anyplace?
I don't have Hedman anywhere. He was usually just a little bit ahead of where I wanted to take defenseman. I didn't feel like there was a huge distinction between Hedman and a guy like John Carlson, who usually went like a full round later. Mm-hmm. So I didn't end up with Hedman anywhere. I kind of had it Yossi and Makar as their own top tier, and then Hedman a little bit more back towards the other tier. A little bit of that was, a lot of that last season actually was power play production. I could pull it up here to figure out exactly how many points he had, but when I was, you know, going through my own projections, Yeah, he had 38 power play points last year, which drove a huge number.
It's massive.
The four seasons before that, he had 26, 25, 22, and 24, and then all the way up to 38 last year. So that was did seem like a bit of an anomaly to me. Did affect how I projected him. So, yeah, I feel like it's really tough with Hedman right now. I do think that if I had Hedman and he gets back on the top power play now, I might try to use it as a selling point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do kind of feel that with him. It just, like, even in these last five games, there's just no signs of life. 88th in shots per 60. That's amongst defensemen. That's not, like, among the league. That's amongst defensemen. There are a lot of guys that you've never heard of that are above him in these metrics. 122nd in Corsi 4 per 60, which is just unfathomable. Like, the Lightning are a good team, and it seems like he's a net negative when he's on the ice, which is just, yeah, I just can't wrap my head around what's going on with Hedman right now. Maybe there's injury. It seems like he's still hitting, which is one thing I usually look at when I suspect an injury might be at play, is if a guy's still hitting, then you kind of figure, okay, he's still throwing his body around, probably not hurting too much. I really don't know what to make about Hedman long term. I do think if he gets on this power play and you still have him, you might want to at least explore the option of using it as a sell high, or sell as high as you can, kind of.
Yeah. Well, what would you accept for Hedman? Like, that's kind of an interesting, like, if he plays, he's power play one again, he puts a little, you know, streak together, in his next five games he gets 5 points. You know, could you get off him? Who could you get for him?
Yeah. Yeah. Then you'd really have to look at it. I'm trying to think who might be in that tier. If you could get Carlson for him, I'd probably do that.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know if you'd get that. Maybe even someone like a Dougie Hamilton, with New Jersey looking the way they're looking. We're going to talk about Hamilton in a second here because he hasn't been too hot of late himself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know.
What about Heiskanen? Yeah. Like, I think I told you last podcast I had on my team that I care about the most. I had Hedman, McAvoy, Heiskanen, and Dougie Hamilton. Those are my D. It's a 10-team league, so yeah, we got lots of options there, right? But I had to drop Heiskanen because I can't drop Hedman, can I? And then Heiskanen's, you know, he's losing his mind, of course, with Dallas going crazy. It's like, yeah, this guy he's just pissing me off. But yeah, I don't know. Would you do Heiskanen for Hedman straight up if he puts up some points on power play one?
I feel like I probably would take Heiskanen at this point with the way that Dallas looks. Yeah, I don't think that's crazy. There's probably more defensemen just that I'm not bringing to mind that I do one for one. But yeah, hopefully
Sean Durzi for Hedman. Right there. Would you do it? No, Durzi. No, you're not taking Durzi. I'll get
not that.
Keep him on the Durzi shore. Down, yeah. All right, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, if there are people out there with Hedman questions, jump in the Discord and throw them at us. Throw out your trade scenarios, and I'll give you my best.
Give us some trades.
Yeah, we love talking trades in the Discord, so jump in there and vent with us about Hedman as well. All right, let's keep it rolling. Let's talk about Dougie Hamilton here since we mentioned him just now. One assist his last five games, 20 minutes, 51 seconds, average time on ice. This is not what I thought Dougie Hamilton was going to be, especially with New Jersey being hot. What do you think about Hamilton? Do you think this is just a blip? New Jersey is for real or not for real? What are we thinking about this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not worried at all because I do have Dougie Hamilton in a couple leagues as well. And he's getting a ton of shots. He's still shooting the lights out. In fact, he's shooting more than he shot last year. So, you know, and we know just from even talking on this podcast that New Jersey is, I mean, we're quarter way into the season, looks pretty legit to me. They're leading in all the team metrics, like their individual players are leading in metrics, you know, like, and I have no concerns really about Dougie Hamilton. Yeah. 0 points in his last three games, or, you know, is it even worse than that? What is it? One assist in his last five games. Yeah. I mean, it's going to come, you know, because before those last five games, yeah, he had, I mean, what was he cooking at there? It was nothing amazing, but, you know, he'll be fine. I think what did you draft Dougie Hamilton for? You know, he's going to have a much better season than he had last season. That's for sure. I still think, like, he's on a 52 point pace right now. I think 60 points is reasonable with, like, excellent goals. He might get 15 goals for a defenseman. And I love that. So yeah, Dougie Hamilton is is a buy low. If people are even selling, like, I don't know, I'm not selling Dougie Hamilton, no matter what people are offering me, unless they offer Hedman straight up and then I'm going for it. Okay. But other than that, Dougie Hamilton, I'm into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm there with you. It is worth noting that over this last little bit, he has kind of fallen off. So he's 31st amongst defensemen in shots per 60, 22nd in individual Corsi 4 per 60 over these last five games. Normally, he's like top three in both those metrics. If you take out any like five-game stretch, he's right up there. 55th in Corsi 4 per 60 and 40th in scoring chances 4 per 60. Again, not amazing given the team context and how well the Devils have been playing. Right. But overall, like if I look at the 25 games he's played on the season, like this is the best on-ice numbers he's seen in his career. And he played on some pretty good Calgary and Carolina teams and some pretty pretty huge years for those teams. So
yeah, absolutely.
The on-ice context really seems to be the best of his career. The IPP is low again. This is kind of a weird thing. That's kind of the only part that's giving me some pause, I guess, here with Hamilton is that last year with New Jersey, he had a 37.5% IPP. He'd never been near that low, like normally like 45 to 55 IPP guy throughout his career. And then last year it was 37.5. I was like, no way that happens again. He's going to be back right back up to 45 to 50, somewhere in there. And this year, through 25 games, he's right there again, 37% IPP. And now I'm wondering, right, is it just something about New Jersey? I think the team has changed enough this year that it's just a fluke overall. I'm not reading too much into that number. It's just kind of a weird statistical anomaly that's throwing me for a loop. But yeah, overall, season long, I don't have any concerns with Hamilton. As you said, 52-point pace. I do think that 60-point pace over the rest of the season is within reach for him. Just the offensive context of the Devils being the way they are, for me, is enough to think of him as a buy low, if that is a possibility at this point.
Right.
Yeah, Hamilton for Hedman. What would you do there?
Yeah, at this point, I take Hamilton. I'd just be like, get Hedman out of my sight. All right, and then he'll, of course, he's going to blow up. But you know, I'm going down with the ship on Hedman. I don't even care. That's it. Yeah. He seems like a nice person. So I follow him on Instagram. Very good content there. So I don't know what
going. Yeah, with. I think I'd honestly take Hamilton over Hedman rest of season at this point too.
Yeah, totally.
I don't think that's crazy, to be honest. So there you have it. Let's go for one more defenseman that we had in this list here. That's going to be Jacob Trouba. One assist his last five games. The weird part for me here is the average time on ice, 18:46 average time on ice. I didn't check to see if there was something, you know, a specific one game where maybe he left early with an injury or something like that. But that one kind of stuck out to me. I think that's overall, like the weird part of this is with the one assist in these five games, he's got 100% IPP. So that means there was only one goal scored while he was on the ice for five total games and he got an assist on it. So
way to go.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is a weird thing. That's for sure. But yeah, what do we think about Trouba? Is this a blip? We kind of know him as this peripheral god who gives us like, those 45 points ish, always in that range from the second power play unit. But yeah, we're really about the peripherals with Trouba. So are we concerned about the lack of production here in the last little bit, or are we just so enamored with the peripherals we don't really care?
Yeah, I don't really think so. I mean, to me, Trouba, you're drafting him for the peripherals, right? Like he's not gonna, you know, his season or his best ever season is 50 points. That was with his last year in Winnipeg. He hasn't come close to that, you know, even last year, 39 points. I like the 11 goals he had last year. That's nice, but that's not expected. I mean, they got Adam Fox for that, right? So he's there to provide leadership, to hit the hell out of people and block a bunch of shots and throw his helmet as hard as he can at the boards. That's what he did the other game there. He was pissed. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Trouba. I think that ice time, he did have a game. I'm just looking at his game log here, like his last game in Chicago. I think he was he ejected or he got a misconduct? I don't know, but he only played 13 and a half minutes in that game. So that's probably affecting it. But yeah, I mean, he did have a couple games there under 20 minutes. I don't like to see that for a defenseman. So we'll see. I don't know. I like the spots where I have Trouba. I drafted him for a purpose. So if you drafted Trouba as your number one defenseman to get you goals and assists, That was probably a mistake on your part. All right. But I mean, this guy has 88 hits in what, like 22 games or something. Yeah. 26 games, 88 hits. What the hell? This is an angry man. All right. He's got some anger issues, and you know, that's why you drafted him. Right. So I'm not too worried at all. Just depends on what you need. Right.
Yeah. So I did find what happened to Trouba. It looks like he got a charging penalty, laid at some guy out, left his feet in a hole. It's a whole thing. There's some very
was it Anthony Seau? Did he nail? Was that Anthony when he nailed Anthony Seau? Yeah, Anthony Seau. Yeah, that was a big hit.
That was a pretty big hit. Looks
this
like
guy's just
a
brute,
a
like
end,
for
but,
sure.
Yeah. but yeah, Trouba, I think. Overall, I am a little bit concerned about that time on ice because even before that game, he was at 20.04, 18.30, 19.34. So it's not like a guaranteed 21, 22 minutes like it's felt like it should be with Trouba.
Right.
So that does concern you because obviously less time on ice, less peripherals, less counting stats, all of it. So there is that concern with me. I don't think that, you know, long term we're talking about a significant downgrade in his numbers. I think he has probably gotten a little bit unlucky with the zero goals he has on the season this far.
Right.
That just seems like a bit of an anomaly, especially across 77 shots. Like something's going to go in for him eventually. Keep plugging. you'll get there.
You know, with your statistics here, Nate, I see. So he's 24th in individual Corsi 4 per 60, but then just the Corsi 4 per 60 is 166. What's the correlation there? What does that mean?
So the individual numbers, 24th in individual Corsi 4 per 60 among defensemen over these last five games, and then 166th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60. So obviously the on-ice number, the entire team, while he's on the ice, plays into that number. It does mean that, you know, relative to another defenseman, he's definitely outperforming in terms of his shot attempts on net. He's outperforming the team context for sure.
But the team isn't. Yeah, when he's out
but
there.
But the team isn't, and you would hope that he would also have a bigger net positive effect on the team numbers as well.
Right.
Than being at 166th, especially a team like the Rangers who should, you know, they should be higher than that for most of their top defensemen. So
yeah, absolutely.
That could be, you know, the reduced ice time. Maybe he's playing with different forward groups than he has been before. I know the Rangers have shuffled their lines around a fair bit, and we'll talk about that a little bit with the next guy. But yeah, there's a few things going on here with Trouba. I don't think in the end you need to be super worried, but I do think you probably need to adjust some expectations at this point as to the overall point possibilities, I guess. The shots should be there, the hits should be there, the blocks should be there, but you know, if you drafted him as someone who's going to score a whole bunch of goals from defense for you, you might be a little disappointed. So take that into account. If you're in a, you know, like a points only league with Trouba, then definitely I'd be a little bit worried about him.
Yep, totally agree.
Let's talk about another Ranger here, Vincent Trocheck, one goal in his last five games. Kind of a symptom of a larger problem maybe with the Rangers here. A few of these guys showing up on this list. 18.48 average time on ice. Did get back with Artemi Panarin on that line in the last game, which is obviously key for a guy like Trocheck. What are you thinking about your guy, Vinny Tro?
Tro for show. I will stand by this guy. I talked him up a lot in the offseason. I like Vinny Trocheck. I've liked him in the past. He reminds me of kind of another guy I would target years ago, like a Blake Wheeler style. You know, he plays the power play. He plays shorthanded. You know, he's looking at 20 minutes of ice time per night. This year, it's not getting up to 20, but he has the potential for sure. It's been pretty painful to see the lack of production because the way the Rangers came out the gate, it looked like this was going to be a slam dunk. Like this guy can get 70, 75 points, you know, plus a ton of peripherals. Plus if you're in a face-off league, he's going to get you a ton of points there. Trocheck's a really interesting player for me because I have him. I drafted him in probably like six teams because he was going so late and I was just banging that drum, like, you know, get Vinny Trocheck. And in all the different leagues, based on the settings, he's ranked like drastically different, you know? So the one that I care about the most is pretty much a points league. You don't get any hits or blocks, right? And he's only ranked like 148th in that one. But I have him in one league that has faceoffs, hits, and blocks, and he's like 23rd overall in that league. You know what I mean? So his value, it just depends on what you need, right? And this is even with him, you know, not getting any kind of offense going, right? So I like Trocheck. He's anyone who's on that Rangers power play, like that, you know, Zibanejad is a slow player as well. He's very, very much a second half player. I think the Rangers are going to be fine, but right now they're struggling, right? They're kind of just win one, lose one, win two, lose two. It's just, and Shesterkin's not doing what you kind of expected him to do, right? So, but he's on that number one power play. He's getting time with great players. Trocheck's going to be okay. I think, you know, 60 points is probably more realistic at this point now, 55, 60 points.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll hit you with a few numbers from this last five-game stretch. 63rd in shots per 60, 61st in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On ice context, right around the same, 60th in Corsi, 4 per 60, 68th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. So I do think that it's a solid, if unspectacular, environment over this last little bit, even though he wasn't with Panarin for that whole stretch. So that's a positive sign for me. You would expect that both the individual and the on-ice numbers would go up with Panarin on that line. And I do think, like, they paid this guy a whole whack of money, right, this offseason. So they paid him to play with Panarin. Like,
absolutely.
They may flip guys around when things aren't working, when things aren't clicking. They may flip things around a little bit, but the end goal here is for Trocheck to play with Panarin 99% of the time. 47-point pace on the season is not particularly exciting, but there are obviously, like, there are huge signs under the hood that this is not going to sustain at this level. 48% IPP being the most glaring, I guess, stat.
Right.
We did have a question. What is IPP? So IPP stands for individual points percentage. It's basically if you take the number of goals scored while that player's on the ice and then, you know, take their number of points, you just kind of figure out the percentage of goals scored while they're on the ice that they factored into. Higher end players tend to factor into more of their team's goals that are scored when they're on the ice because they're touching the puck more and setting up more plays and scoring more goals and such. But generally, players tend to regress to their kind of career average IPP over an extended period of time. So that's why it's a pretty sticky stat for the vast majority of players. If you look at what they do season after season after season, usually they're within, you know, 5% of their 5 to 7% maybe of their kind of career IPP numbers. Kind of like a dominator rating type thing. That's a football reference for you. But yeah, basically it's like a percentage. A dominator rating is like a percentage of the team's total offense in football. That's basically the same idea with IPP is what percentage of the team's offense that's happening while they're on the ice are they directly factoring into. That's basically the same idea there. One more here that I want to talk about before we get out of here, and that's going to be Cole Sillinger. And this is kind of just exclusively because I was big into Sillinger. I talked a lot about him in the offseason. 0 points his last five games, 12 minutes, 36 seconds average time on ice. And the, like, all the advanced stats just look totally atrocious for Cole Sillinger. 415th in shots per 60, 253rd in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. So he's still doing that a little bit better than his shots, but obviously still not very good at all. And then the on-ice context is just truly brutal. 537th in both Corsi 4 and scoring chances, 4 per 60. So basically one of the absolute worst players in the league over this last five games in terms of the on-ice numbers. So the reason I was into Sillinger this offseason was because he came in as an 18-year-old rookie, as the youngest player in the league last year, and he put up some very, very solid numbers, especially on the individual side. He had an 8.2 shots per 60, he had a 9.1 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. For a player that young to come in and do that as a rookie, I was pretty impressed. So I thought that, you know, if he takes a step in year two, then you're talking about a player who suddenly is starting to hit those thresholds, that 10 shots per 60 or that 10 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 that I often talk about. I like to see these players hit, and that starts to portend something for fantasy relevance. So what has happened with Sillinger this year has been basically the exact opposite. He's trended in the wrong direction, basically across the board. obviously some things to blame here on the team and the team context. Obviously things in Columbus haven't gone to plan this year, and he's not obviously really benefiting at all from the Johnny Gaudreau signing. He hasn't played with Gaudreau at all, I don't think, at even strength or on the power play this season. Patrick Laine, even Laine's and Gaudreau have basically been centered by Boone Jenner whenever everybody's been healthy. That's been the line. So Sillinger not really benefiting a whole lot from the kind of elite players that are there in Columbus. Zach Werenski going down to injury obviously didn't help anything either. So I do think there's, you know, there could be some excuses to be made here for Sillinger, but definitely he's taken a step in the wrong direction this year, and that's something that happens. So I want to, you know, just let people know that the reasons I was in on Cole Sillinger, I'll be in on another similar player probably this season for the same reasons, and I don't think it's crazy to kind of go back to that same well in that way. But when you see a player now, we're 23 games into a season, and you see them take that step backwards, then you've got to reevaluate what you think of them long term for yourself. So that's what I'm thinking currently about Cole Sillinger. I don't know if you have any thoughts about you know, what you like to see in a rookie, and then what might change your opinion the following season, or what you expect to see. Do you expect, you know, the sophomore slump we've all heard about, do you expect that to happen the following season? Or are you always just hoping that the arrow only points up?
Yeah, I can't say I'm one way or the other. I usually try and judge each situation, you know, by itself. But I mean, for a player to come in that young, yeah, it's like just knowing what, you know, what I was like at that age, what other people are like at that age, like, there's just a lot, your brain isn't even fully developed at that point. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like, it's hard to expect a lot from a player like that, unless they're like a Connor Bedard or like a Connor McDavid or sure. Like these players, these generational kind of players.
Anybody else named Connor.
Yeah. Anyone named Connor, you get into the league and you get the biz, but yeah, I don't know. Like this is an interesting one. And I saw his name on the list that you mentioned. I was like, okay, yeah, you must have something to say about this guy. Cause yeah, he's been a no thought this year, but I do. Yeah. The off season for sure. I thought Sillinger had a little bit of a chance to, you know, like everybody's excited about Laine and John Gaudreau. And yeah, he just hasn't had a chance to play with them. Right. So to me, he's still so young. This could be, I don't know, when you get in the league, I can just imagine you're still feeling the confidence from your junior years, right? You're going from being the guy, being the main scorer, being the main guy, and you get in, you have a little success and you ride that. And then it starts to sink in, right? It's like, yeah, this is a grind and these guys are freaking good. You know what I mean? Yeah. And now I'm only getting like 9 minutes a night or 10 minutes a night. It's like, it's gotta be hard on their psyche, you know? So I hope this guy, you know, I hope he can kind of put it together. This season seems like a bit of a write off, but just Columbus in general, their whole team is looking kind of stinky and he's a part of it. So I hope he just develops well and has some, you know, gets put in some good spots and they put some trust into him. Right. Cause that's what these young players need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I just wanted to bring up Sillinger just for that reason, because I was into him a little bit. We see with, like we were talking last week about Jason Robertson, right. And how he showed us actually something not all that dissimilar in terms of the underlying stats. He had more points scored, and so obviously you take that into consideration too. I think everybody had way more expectation for Jason Robertson after his rookie season than they did for Sillinger after his rookie season, but in terms of the advanced stats, they weren't all that dissimilar after their rookie season. But Robertson's arrow just points up and up and up after year after year after, like, basically after each 20-game section, he seemed to take another step. So That's kind of the difference you start to see. And you start to see, you know, a 23-game sample we have this season with Sillinger now where he's failed to take that step and he's actually regressed. And, yeah, like you say, it's a 19-year-old player. It's by no means a death knell on his career or anything totally. Like that. But in terms of fantasy, if you're playing Dynasty, things like that, where you might be hanging on to Sillinger, definitely it's not a positive sign. If you're expecting, you know, Sillinger to be, or hoping anyway that Sillinger might develop into a 40 goal scorer based on a really promising 18-year-old season. Maybe your confidence level in that is pretty shaken at this point, because I think the lesson that I really want to impart here is that the elite players like the Jason Robertsons, when they do get that opportunity, they just absolutely explode with it. And it's pretty rare, unless there's really some underlying situation that's going on. Like, you see a Tage Thompson, a guy who's 6'7", and it takes a while for everything to work and for him to catch up to his body. And then when he finally gets it, he explodes, right? When you have something, some sort of reason that you can ascribe kind of a later breakout to, then that makes sense. But when it's just an average player, you kind of have to evaluate these stats as they come. And the truly elite players, the big difference makers for fantasy, they seem to kind of only ascend, I would say, from the time they hit the league. So that would be, I guess, my takeaway with Sillinger here, if I can make it into a broader one for the audience.
There you go. Dynasty leagues, hold on to Sillinger. All right. He's going to be fine in about 5 years. All right.
All right. Well, that's all we got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, free resource. Check that out. Use it, abuse it to beat all of your league mates. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for this podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify, all linked in the show description. And that's going to be it, folks. Much love.
Have a great week, everybody. I want to say hi to my kids. They're watching the YouTube video from the bath. Daddy's coming up very shortly.
There we go. Much love, bye-bye, everybody. Yep. Take care.